శ్రీమద్ హిజవాయనకే శ్రీ భక్తిరంత సంశుల ప్రభుపాదికి సమేటి గౌరవ భక్తులందికి చంద్రాచమద్ భాగవతానికి గౌర ప్రేమనంది. ఓం అజ్ఞానాతిమిరంధస్య జ్ఞానంజనశలాకయ చక్షురున్మీలితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీగురవే నమః. శ్రీచైతన్యమనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపకదా మహ్యం దదాతి స్వాపదాంతికాం. వందేహం శ్రీగురో శ్రీయుతపదకమలం శ్రీగురున్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగరజాతం సహగణరఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనసహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధాకృష్ణపాదాన్ సహగణలలిత శ్రీవిశాఖాన్వితంశ్చ. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధ దీనబంధ జగత్పదే గోపేశ గోపికా కాంత రాధకాంత నమస్తుతే. తప్త కాంచన గౌరంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరీ వృషభానుసుతే దేవీ ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే. పాంచాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపా సింధవ్యేవ చ పతితానం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. దిస్ మార్నింగ్ వి రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం కాంటో 10 చాప్టర్ 51 ది డెలివరెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ముచకుంద అండ్ వి హావ్ టెక్స్ట్ 35-43 టు కవర్. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఏవం సంభాషితో రాజ్ఞా ఏవం సంభాషితో రాజ్ఞా ఏవం సంభాషితో రాజ్ఞా భగవాన్ భూత భావన భగవాన్ భూత భావన భగవాన్ భూత భావన ప్రత్యాహ ప్రహసన్ వాణ్యా ప్రత్యాహ ప్రహసన్ వాణ్యా ప్రత్యాహ ప్రహసన్ వాణ్యా మేఘ నాద గభీరయా మేఘనాద గభీరయా మేఘనాద గభీరయా ఏవం సంభాషితో రాజ్ఞా భగవాన్ భూత భావన ప్రత్యాహ ప్రహసన్ వాణ్యా మేఘనాద గభీరయా ఏవం సంభాషితో రాజ్ఞా భగవాన్ భూత భావన ప్రత్యాహ ప్రహసన్ వాణ్యా మేఘనాద గభీరయా ఏవం సంభాషితో రాజ్ఞా భగవాన్ భూత భావన ప్రత్యాహ ప్రహసన్ వాణ్యా మేఘనాద గభీరయా. evam sambhashita raja bhagavan bhuta bhavana meghana gabhiraya evam sambhashita rajya bhagavan bhuta bhavanah pratyaha prahasan vanya meghana gabhiraya evam sambhashita rajya bhagavan bhuta bhavanah pratyaha prahasan vanya meghanadha gabhiraya evam sambhashita rajya bhagavan bhuta bhavanah pratyaha prahasan vanya meghanadha gabhiraya. Evam sambhashita rajya bhagavan bhuta bhavanah pratyaha prahasan vanya meghana jagabhiraya evam sambhashita rajya bhagavan bhuta bhavanah pratyaha prahasan vanya meghana jagabhiraya evam sambhashita rajya bhagavan bhuta bhavanah pratyaha prahasan vanya meghana jagabhiraya evam. Thus, sambhashitah, spoken to, rajya, by the king, bhagavan, the supreme lord, bhuta, of all creation, bhavanah, the origin, pratyaha, he replied, prahasan, smiling broadly, vanya, with words, megha, of clouds, nada, like the rumbling, gabhiraya, deep. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus addressed by the king, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, origin of all creation, smiled and then replied to him in a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds. So we can just chant the other verses and together and I'll read the translations. 36. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Janma Karma Bhidanani Santi Menga Sahasrashaha Nashakyante Nusankhyatum Anantvanmayapiha. Supreme Lord said, my dear friend, I have taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, and accepted thousands of names. In fact, my births, activities, and names are limitless, and thus even I cannot count them. 37. Kvachid rajam sivimame partivan yurjanmibihi guna karma bhidanani name janmani karhichit. After many lifetimes, someone might count the dust particles on the earth, but no one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births. 38. Kalatrayopapannani janma karmani mendripa anukramantu naivantam gacchanti paramarshayaha. O King, the greatest sages enumerate my births and activities, which take place throughout the three phases of time, but never do they reach the end of them. 39:40. Tatapyadyatayan yanga shrinushva gatato mama vigyapito virinchena puraham dharma guptaye bhumir bhara yamananam asuranam kshayayacha avatirno yadukule griha anakadundube vadanti vasudeveti vasudeva sutam himam. Nonetheless, O friend, I will tell you about my current birth, name, and activities. Kindly hear. Some time ago, Lord Brahma requested me to protect religious principles and destroy the demons who were burdening the earth. Thus I descended in the Yadu dynasty in the home of Anakudundubi. Indeed, because I am the son of Vasudev, people call me Vasudeva. 41. Kalane mirhata kamsa pralambadyascha sadvishaha ayam cha yavano dagdho rajamste tikma chakshusha. I have killed Kalanemi, reborn as Kamsa, as well as Pralamba and other enemies of the pious. And now, O King, this barbarian has been burned to ashes by your piercing glance. 42.
Soham tavanukrahartham guham etam upagataha prarthidav prachuram purvam tvayaham bhaktavatsalaha.
Translation. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I have personally come to this cave to show you mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees. Report. It is apparent from this verse that Mushukunda was a devotee of the Supreme Lord. He had prayed for the Lord's association, and now Shri Krishna granted his fervent request. 43.
Varan vranishvara jarshe sarvan kaman dadamite mam prasanno janah kashchin nabhuyor hati shochitam.
Now choose some benedictions for me, O saintly king. I will fulfill all your desires. One who has satisfied me need never again lament. Purport. The Acharyas explained that we lament when we feel incomplete, when we have lost something, or when we fail to achieve something desirable. One who has satisfied Krishna and thus attained the Lord's mercy will never be troubled in these ways. Lord Krishna is a reservoir of all pleasure, and he enjoys sharing his spiritual bliss with all living beings. We need only cooperate with the Supreme Lord. So the setting is Mushukunda, after having been rudely awoken by Kalayavana and having burnt him to ashes, he has darshan of the Supreme Lord within the cave, and he has been questioning him as to his identity. He doesn't know. He has a hint, he has a feeling that this must be the Supreme Lord, but he's not certain. So he's been asking the Lord to introduce himself, and he's also introduced himself. Mushukunda introduced himself to the Lord, and now the Lord is responding to him. So I'll just speak a little bit about the previous verses and then come back to the last one and focus on that more. So, text 35, the Lord is beginning to speak, and it describes the sound of the Lord's voice, which is as deep as the rumbling of clouds. That's a very grand and majestic voice the Lord is addressing Mushukunda in. And you can also keep in mind that this dialogue is going on within the mountain cave, a very secluded mountain cave. Mushukunda wanted to sleep for a long time, so he chose somewhere very secluded where he wouldn't be disturbed. So within this very deep, dark cave, which has now suddenly been lit up by the Lord's effulgence, the Lord's voice is resounding. You can imagine it's probably echoing through the cave. Just one entrance to the cave, and the Lord is speaking in a very deep voice. And you can imagine also Kalayavana's ashes are smoldering in the corner, and the smoke is drifting up. Muchukunda, having just woken up after such a long time, is a little bewildered as to what's going on. And this beautiful effulgent personality of the Lord is lighting up the cave. And now he's also addressing him in this deep, resounding voice echoing throughout the cave. So then the Lord starts to introduce himself. And he doesn't just, in keeping with the grandeur of the moment, he's not simply introducing himself, yeah, I'm Krishna from Mathura, or, you know, I'm Bob from, you know, Jacksonville, as we sometimes may introduce ourselves. But he's really kind of playing along with Muchukunda's awe in seeing the Lord. And he's drawing out his personality and giving a lot of explanation. So he first says, I've taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, thousands of names. And his births, activities, names are limitless. So he's giving hints as to who he really is. And by these hints, Muchukunda will understand that he's actually speaking to the Supreme Lord. It's very nice the way the Lord is introducing himself. And he says, even I cannot count them. This is quite astonishing how the Lord cannot count his own names or his births and activities. And he explains further that you might count the dust particles on the earth. Now, someone might be able to do that after many lifetimes of counting, but the Lord's activities, qualities, and names and births can never be finished, can never be fully listed. And he further describes that the great sages, they enumerate his qualities, his births, activities, but they're never satiated, or they never reach the end of them. And just like we also know how it's described that Ananta Shesha with his unlimited hoods and mouths is from the beginning of time glorifying the Lord with so many different mouths, he's speaking so many different qualities of the Lord, but he's never reached the end of them. So what to speak of us, how much we can actually learn about the Lord. It's described sometimes that the Bhagavatam in the heavenly planets is so much bigger than what we have. We have these 12 cantos, 18,000 shlokas, and there are many detailed descriptions of the Lord and his incarnations. But how much can we actually understand? How much can we know? How much can we digest? There's so many shastras that we are not even aware of, and so many unlimited activities and pastimes of the Lord. So we just have perhaps a drop that we have access to, and even that is sometimes overwhelming to understand. So the Lord is not limited by anything. Unlimited incarnations and unlimited kalpas for unlimited time. So there are so many activities of the Lord we may not be aware of. In particular, now in text 39:40, Krishna is giving his specific information about his current incarnation. And he says that Lord Brahma has asked him to descend to destroy the demons and to protect religious principles. And therefore he has appeared as the son of Vasudev. So often, sometimes devotees don't make the distinction between Vasudev and Vasudev. The other day, Nagaraj Prabhu was giving us a little Sanskrit lesson. So this is another item to remember, that Krishna is Vasudeva because he's the son of Vasudeva. So the Vasudeva is the father, Vasudeva is the son. So the Lord has appeared in the home of Anakudundavi, is another name of Vasudev, and in the Yadu dynasty. And he gives a couple of instances of what he's performed so far in his pastimes. He's killed Kamsa, who was previously Kalanemi. Perhaps Muchukunda had heard of Kalanemi, being a person from the previous yugas. He may have been familiar with the name of Kalanemi. So the Lord describes to him that I've killed Kalanemi, who was reborn as Kamsa, and Pralamba, and other enemies. And it's interesting also to note that Krishna didn't actually kill Pralambasura. Pralambasura was killed by Balaram. But in a broader sense, it's all part of Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's plan and Krishna's expansion, as Balaram has killed Pralambasura. In fact, even when Krishna entered the wrestling arena of Kamsa and the people were talking about, oh, here Krishna and Balaram are coming. So even that, one of those descriptions there, it's mentioned that Krishna is the killer of Pralamba also. So perhaps there was a little bit of confusion. The Mathura people perhaps are not so aware of exactly which demon was killed by whom. Pralambasura was killed by Balaram. But here, Krishna, in a broader sense, is saying, I also killed Pralamba. And he's including Muchukunda in his pastimes. He's saying, you also helped me now by killing this barbarian, Kalayavana. And now, O king, this barbarian has been burned to ashes by your piercing glance. So he's including Muchukunda in his pastimes, making him feel welcome and part of his leela. In a very nice manner. He's congratulating him for helping him kill this Kalayavana. Text 42, it says in the purport that it seems that Muchukunda was previously a devotee of the Supreme Lord. So in tomorrow's verse, there's a little mention of that Muchukunda was aware that the Lord would descend. And he had heard this from Garga. This is the ancient sage Garga. So I'm not sure if this Garga is the same as the Garga Muni that is in Krishna's pastimes now. It could be. There are many rishis and munis who are living from multiple yugas. Just like Parashuram, he was present in Rama's pastimes in Treta Yuga, and he's also present at the Mahabharata era, which is the Dwapara Yuga. Even Jambavan and Vivida, different personalities, they were living over many yugas. So it could be that the same Garga Muni is the one who met Muchukunda. And it's described actually that Garga Muni once came to visit King Muchukunda, and he was very pleased by his service, and he blessed him that in the future he will be able to have darshan of the Lord. It's interesting to note that the demigods, they weren't able to give such a benediction to Muchukunda. You know, they said, we can't give you liberation, and they could give him sleep. But devotees of the Lord, they are able to actually give that higher benediction, higher blessing, that someone can get the mercy of the Lord or even the darshan of the Lord. So it seems that Muchukunda got this blessing from Garga Muni, and he was already a Vaishnava, so therefore he is now getting the fruit of that blessing and having face-to-face darshan of the Lord. And the Lord is so happily welcoming him and including him in his leela by congratulating him for killing Kalayavana. So the Lord is saying that you repeatedly prayed to me in the past, so I have come to show you my mercy, because I am Bhakta Vatsala, I am affectionate to my devotees. So text 43, the Lord is ready to offer him any benediction that he wants. He'll fulfill all his desires. And one who has satisfied me need never again lament. So this is the culmination of the Lord's speech to Muchukunda. He's explained his identity and explained that Muchukunda is his devotee and he's merciful to his devotees. Therefore, he's going to offer him some benediction. So in the future, we'll see what benediction Muchukunda wishes for. But the Lord here is saying that whatever you need, I'll give it, and you do not need to lament anymore. Because in one sense, you can think of Muchukunda's... He went through quite a lot, actually, because he was fighting for the demigods for, it says, thousands of years without even resting. And in that time, when he finally finished fighting, when the demigods were able to replace him with Kartikeya as the new commander, the Muchukunda was given relief. And the demigod said, you know, you can take any benediction from us. But they also told him that because you've been fighting in the heavens, the time here is a different calculation compared to the earth. So actually, as you've been fighting for us, your whole dynasty, your family, your children, everything has been destroyed by the course of time. So you can just imagine Muchukunda having gone to fight for the demigods, probably was expecting to come back home, but there was no home, and he was not even remembered in history. No family, no home, nothing left for him. In that sense, he's been through quite a lot of turmoil in his life, and now he's receiving the ultimate darshan of the Lord and to perfect his life. So what I wanted to concentrate about today was this point of satisfying the Lord and worshiping the Lord and the benefits and what that accomplishes in one's life. In the purport it says that Krishna is a reservoir for all pleasure, and we need only cooperate with the Supreme Lord. So there are various descriptions in the Shastra of the benefits of worshiping the Lord. Now, of course, we know in various scriptures, various personalities are supposed to be worshipped. Various categories of living entities are supposed to be acknowledged and worshipped. And how can a devotee be freed from all these obligations? So there's a very famous shloka from the 11th canto, which Narad Muni has spoken to Vasudev, Krishna's father. And I think it was quoted also recently in class. Can you put it on the 22.141? And it's also quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's quoted throughout Prabhupada's lectures and conversations. And we have it on the board, so we can chant it together.
Devarshi bhutapta nrinam pitrinam nakin karo nayam rini charajan sarvatmanaya sharanam sharanyam kato mukundam parihritya kartam.
One who has given up all material duties and taken full shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda, who gives shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even his forefathers who have passed away. So Prabhupada quotes this verse twice in the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, because we know that Arjuna was worried about his different obligations and what would happen if he killed his relatives, and Krishna was encouraging him to simply do his duty. And in the purport, twice Prabhupada quotes this verse, saying that, you know, if you worship Krishna wholeheartedly, then all one's other duties are taken care of. So there's a list there of different personalities who are supposed to be satisfied. The devas, the demigods, rishis, deva, rishi, bhuta, the general living entities. Apta is the family. Trinam means human society. Pitrinam is the forefathers. So the first line of the verse is listing all the persons to whom we are obligated. Now, in the modern context, these don't seem very relevant, especially we see in this modern Kali Yuga, people are not into having responsibilities or obligations. People are always trying to pass the buck. Even when you call, you know, like customer service to make a complaint about something, the people answering the phone, they'll always say, oh, they did it, or I'll have to transfer you to that department. People don't want to take responsibility for their own actions or the actions of their institution. And especially, I think in America, this is, we get so many lawsuits, ridiculous lawsuits, because people don't take responsibility. They're always trying to pass the buck to someone else. But in Vedic times, the sense of responsibility was huge, and it was an integral part of life. So these different obligations to the devas, to the pitris, to the society, to the living entities, were all to be carried out as part of daily life. And in the purport, there's a verse from the Manu Smriti, which gives some description of how each of these categories can be satisfied, how they can be worshipped. So, adhyapanam brahma yagya pitra yagyam tutarpanam homo daivo balir bhauto niryagyo titi pujanam. So, the demigods, we know, they are worshipped by offerings, yagya especially. Even in Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, Krishna says that yagya was created for maintenance of the universe. The humans are supposed to offer sacrifice to the demigods in recognition of all the facilities they get through the medium of the demigods. And even in Krishna's pastimes, we know the cowherd boys, Nanda Maharaj, they were planning to worship Lord Indra because Indra is supplying rain. Similarly, Surya is supplying sun. Without sun, rain, air, moonshine, there will be no way of surviving on this planet. And when Prabhupada would explain this verse, many times he would say that just like we are dependent on electricity, so, you know, even in this temple, there's so many lights are on, the microphone is running through electricity. And if we don't pay our electric bill, what will be the result? Eventually, you'll be cut off. The electric company will cut off your electric supply. Similarly, if you don't pay your water bill, your water will be cut off. So, in ordinary life, we are paying for water, for electricity, for so many necessities of life. So why is it we don't think we have to pay for the sun or for the rain? Therefore, Vedic life was structured in such a way that the demigods were regularly worshipped through performance of sacrifice. So the demigods are worshipped through sacrifice. Then the great sages who have compiled all the scriptures by which we are able to learn how to conduct ourselves in this world, they're also supposed to be respected and honored. And here the verse is saying by studying the Vedas, studying the Shastra, then the sages who wrote the Shastra or compiled the Shastras are satisfied. Elsewhere, Prabhupada says that following of Brahmacharya also satisfies the sages. And also he says that the Vyasa Puja ceremony of worshipping the representative of Vyasadeva is also one of the ways the great sages are honored and respected. Then the Pitri Yajna. So this is also a very important part of a Vedic culture, offering to the forefathers. And many times we hear in the Shastra of the kings who are very distressed that they're not able to have any sons. So the one reason obviously is to continue the dynasty, but also the putra, the son is supposed to, his role is supposed to deliver the ancestors by the offering of pinda and shraddha. So this is another karmakanda kind of ceremony where the ancestors who are, we may not even know them, they may be distant ancestors, but the descendants are supposed to make these offerings for the benefit of the ancestors. So in case they have been fallen into some hellish condition or unfortunate situation, by those offerings they can be elevated. Now, so this is a very also integral part of Vedic culture, that one has to have someone, family member, a son especially, who will continue that tradition, so the ancestors will be benefited, worshipping of the Pitris. of course, we generally, devotees are not, you know, so involved in such activities, but recommended for a Shraddha ceremony, the devotees can offer Mahaprasad to the forefathers, and that way they'll get spiritual benefit rather than doing a kind of ritualistic karmakanda ceremony. By offering tribute, one performs bhuti yagya. So the exact word is bali, bali dan. I wasn't able to really quite understand what that entails, but when Prabhupada would explain this, many times he would give the example of the cow. So we're depending on the cow for milk, and we depend on the bull for plowing the field, for growing our food, at least traditionally. So therefore the cow and the bull and, you know, all these creatures should be honored. Cow, of course, has a special status. So the bhuti yajna of honoring all living entities is also important. Though exactly what it entails, if there's a ceremony, I wasn't able to write, figure out. The last one is the nri yajna. So nri means society, the human society. So we know in Vedic culture how the honoring of guests is very important. So a guest is called an atithi. Atithi literally means someone who has no date or no appointment. Atithi is the day. So atithi means someone who just comes unexpectedly to your door. In Vedic times, the brahmanas, especially the brahmacharis, they would go out door to door begging. And they were dependent on the alms they received from the householders to survive. They would beg from house to house, whatever they would collect, they would go back, offer to the guru, and the guru would divide that up. Perhaps the guru's wife would make a meal out of it, and then the guru would call the students together to have their meals. So the atithi, the person who comes to your door seeking alms, is supposed to be honored. In fact, there are even a famous phrase from the Taittiriya Upanishad, atithi deva bhava, means the guest should be treated as good as God. So in that way, one can pay back whatever one is owed to society in general, the human society. In this verse, it's called the nri yajna, the sacrifice to the society. So by honoring guests and receiving them properly, offering them at least sitting place, water, Prabhupada said even a poor man can offer a place to sit, some sweet words and some water. What better if one can offer alms properly? So in all these different kinds of yagyas are meant for daily performance in Vedic times. So one can pass one's whole life doing these different yagyas, you know, worshipping the demigods, worshipping the sages, worshipping the entities, the general living entities, the society. And that way, one's life is very structured. But this verse that we are focusing on, it says if one fully surrenders to the Lord, then one doesn't need to engage himself in all the different kinds of yagyas. By this one activity, everyone is taken care of. And of course, there are many other pramans from the Shastra to support this. There's a famous, this verse actually is from the, quoted in the 22nd chapter of Madhilila. This is the Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Sanatana Goswami. So just prior to this, in the same chapter, there's a couple of verses where Lord Chaitanya also emphasizes the same point, how by performance of devotional service, everything is taken care of. Shraddha shabde vishras kohe surira nishchai krishna bhakti koile sarva karma krita hai. So the second line is very simple to understand. Krishna bhakti koile, koile means if one does Krishna bhakti, sarva karma, all work, all duties, krita hai, they become done. Literally it means they're done. And the very next verse after that, Lord Chaitanya quotes the verse from the Bhagavatam about watering the root of the tree and feeding the stomach. Yata atrar mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujho prashaka pranopaharascha yatendriyanam tataiva sarvarhanam achyutejya. So by worship of Achyuta, just as when we water the root of the tree, the entire tree is satisfied. When one feeds the stomach, the entire body is nourished. So simply by worshipping Lord Achyuta, everything, sarva, everything is accomplished. So Lord Chaitanya quotes that verse from the Bhagavatam. And if you go to the verse in the Bhagavatam, it's spoken by Narad Muni to the Prachetas. And in the purport, Prabhupada, it's interesting to know, but Prabhupada quotes the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, sarva karma krita hai. So these verses go hand in hand. In the Bhagavatam, original shloka in the Bhagavatam, speaking about feeding the stomach and watering the root, that quotes the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, which says, everything is done if one worships the Lord. And when you go to the original verse in the CC, the next verse the Lord Chaitanya quotes is this one from the Bhagavatam. So they're both like a couple, they go together. It's nice also to note that the different shastras are corroborating each other. Whatever the conclusion of the Bhagavatam is, it's supported by Chaitanya Charitamrita and vice versa. And so these two verses go together. And you know, we've all seen the drama, at least it used to be quite a common drama in the earlier days of ISKCON, how the senses go on strike and they refuse to feed the stomachs, and we're working so hard, gathering food, walking here and there, chewing, and all the results of our work, all the food we collect goes to the stomach. So this is not fair, this is injustice. We're going to protest, we're going to strike. And the various senses, they decide to, you know, not do anything anymore. They're not going to work anymore out of indignance that the stomach is getting all the benefit. But very soon, the senses realize that they're getting weaker and weaker, because they understand that actually the stomach is nourishing the entire body. By feeding the stomach, all the senses, all the different limbs of the body are nourished and enlivened. So similarly, by worshipping the Lord, all these other activities, which ordinarily are given great stress in Vedic scriptures, are taken care of. So this verse could also perhaps be, it has to be qualified, sarvatmanaya, the one who takes full shelter of the Lord. So similar, in the same vein, if one hasn't taken full shelter of the Lord, then one is still obliged to satisfy these different different categories of living entities, the devas, the pitris, the rishis, the general society, the living entities. So therefore, it's not something that we can lightly give up all these other responsibilities. Oh, I'm a devotee, I do this, I do that, I don't have to bother about anything else. But sarvatmanaya, the verse is actually exhorting us to take full shelter of the Lord. And when one is fully surrendered to the Lord, then this verse will take full effect, that one has no further obligations. Still, we do not disrespect any of these personalities. You know, the demigods are to be respected. They're all ultimately devotees of the Lord. The rishis and sages, you know, even the ones who may not be, you know, necessarily Vaishnavas or have the same Siddhanta as us, they're still great personalities to be respected. You know, we respect, Prabhupada says that Vaishnava respects even an ant, what to speak of other creatures. So all these categories, it's not that because we're devotees and we worship the Lord, therefore we can neglect them or you know, ridicule them or dismiss them totally. We respect everybody, everything, from Lord Brahma down to the ant, and everything in between should be offered all respects by a Vaishnava. But our worship is reserved exclusively for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So, to conclude, I wanted to just tell a little story, one of my favorites from the ninth canto, which is not such a well-known incident. It's just a few verses, but it's very significant in this regard, showing the potency of pure devotional service. So there was a prince named Prishadra, and he was in the Ikshvaku dynasty, and he was given the duty of guarding the cows at night. So all night he would stand guard with his sword to protect the cows from any, you know, any wild creatures. So one night, seems to have been the Amavasya, the dark moon night, there were no lights, very, very dark, and a tiger entered the Goshala. And immediately the cows started to scatter. They were, you know, afraid of the attack of the tiger, and the tiger jumped on one of the cows and started to, you know, attack it. So immediately the cow started to, you know, moo in fear, and Prishadra heard the noise, and he rushed to that spot. But because it was so dark, he wasn't sure, you know, he couldn't see exactly what was going on. So he struck with his sword to protect the cow, but by mistake, he actually killed the cow. Because he couldn't see, wasn't anything to be done really, but when he made the downward strike with his sword, he sliced the ear of the tiger, so the tiger was scared and ran away from the Goshala, and so the other cows were protected. But when in the morning, when the light came, the sun rose, he saw that he had actually slain the cow, and he was feeling, you know, totally mortified, you know, that he committed such a great sin, even though by mistake. And unfortunately, his Kula Guru, Prabhupada emphasizes Kula Guru, who was Vashishta, he was very angry and he cursed him, that you have killed a cow, I curse you in your next life, you're going to be born as a Shudra. You know, it may be hard for us to relate to such a curse because in Kali Yuga everyone is a Shudra, but for a Kshatriya prince of the highest order to be born as a Shudra was, you know, quite an unfortunate situation. And the Prabhupada says actually, Vashishta shouldn't have cursed him. It wasn't, you know, proper curse for the innocent mistake that he made. But it seems that even Vashishta was influenced by motive passion. So he pronounced this curse. So if your guru curses you, next life you're going to become a Shudra. So what did Prishadra do? How did he handle this very unfortunate situation? So it's described in the ninth canto that he renounced everything. You know, he maintained his vow of brahmacharya, controlled his mind and senses. He, you know, ate minimally. He started traveling all around the world, focusing his mind on the Lord. And that way he passed his entire life, the rest of his life. He was still a young man, so however long he lived, he maintained a very high level meditation on the Lord and Krishna consciousness. And it's described that when he passed away, far from becoming a Shudra, which was actually his fate according to the guru's curse, he actually went back to Godhead. So it's just a short anecdote from the Bhagavatam showing that devotional service is so powerful that one can even overcome such a great sin as killing a cow and being cursed by one's spiritual master. So devotional service is such a rare and potent gift that we've been given, and the benefits are unlimited. And we'll see what Muchukunda asks for. You know, he has anything that anyone could possibly want, he has the opportunity to ask for. But we'll see that, you know, he's only interested also in pure devotional service. So this few little lessons from this section of Bhagavatam. And If anyone has any question or comment, we can. I'm going to go to Ramiya Prabhu first because Janmashtami is always there by default.
So I had two sort of questions. One was that if one is not on the level of pure devotional service, then all these different kinds of sacrifices are actually still required, and are they beneficial for one to take up devotional service?
Yeah, that's a good point. The point is that the point I'm trying to emphasize is that we should it shouldn't be something very casual. That we have to be very serious in our devotional service. You know, the verse is one who's taken full shelter. So we have to examine in our lives how much shelter have we taken. Because, of course, coming from Western background, mostly, you know, we're not trained in performing these different kinds of sacrifices or offerings. So really, for us, there's not really any alternative, you know, for devotional service. Perhaps someone who's been trained in these things, they have to, you know, make a conscious like meditation that you know, I have so many obligations, and if someone had been actually fulfilling those and they took up devotional service, then they have to make a conscious meditation that, you know, now because I'm fully surrendered to the Lord or on the path of pure devotional service, therefore I don't need to do these other things. Not that one gives up those things and doesn't take up devotional service and kind of in the middle and does nothing. But one has to consciously, you know, pray to the Lord that, please, you take care of all my other responsibilities. Now I've surrendered unto you. And we can see, like Madhavendra Puri, he makes that prayer that, all, you know, my obeisances to my Sandhya Vandana, Bho Snana Tubhyam Namo, my ritualistic bath. You know, those things are something that he was, you know, trained to do. But now that his mind was fully absorbed in the Lord, they were not any more required. Those things are all supposed to bring one to the level of sattva guna, and, you know, they're all conducive in one sense for taking up devotional service. But once one takes up devotional service, then they don't, you know, really matter anymore. So for, you know, most of us, vast majority of people in Kali Yuga, they're anyway not performing these different sacrifices. So therefore, you know, especially in Kali Yuga, we're only supposed to perform the Sankirtan Yajna. So there's not really much emphasis needed on these other items. You know, if someone had been born in a Brahmin family, they were trained from childhood in these things, there may be a few people like that, then they should make a conscious distinction. Now I'm surrendering to Krishna, he'll take care of all those things.
Hare Krishna. In the last purport, there's a description of how Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasures, and he enjoys sharing that pleasure with others, is that
possible? All living beings, yeah.
With all living beings. And all one has to do is cooperate with him. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful concept, because it's an explanation of you know, how we experience transcendental bliss in our devotional service. Do you know of any verses that corroborate that?
That he enjoys
references? And I've heard Prabhupada speak like this, but I'm wondering if there's any particular references.
That he enjoys sharing spiritual bliss?
Yeah. And this cooperation, that's what it's dependent upon. You know, if you cooperate, then you get the bliss.
Well, that was kind of what I was trying to focus on by serving the Lord, and everything else is taken care of. Presumably, this is from Acharya's commentary, so, you know, you might find something in there. Otherwise, I don't know if anyone knows any particular verse focusing on what Chamashin Guru is asking. Somebody? Yeah? Is it a comment or?
Okay. Looking up the answer, right. Quick question. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjun that, you know, Bahuni me janmani, so many births, you and I have taken, but I know them all, and you don't. But then here it says that he cannot count them. So how do we reconcile these two?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept that even the Lord cannot count them. Because they're not countable, it's unlimited. So you can't, there's no counting of the unlimited. You know, I guess that's a simple answer. And it's also ongoing. It's not, it's not like it's ending at a certain point. Unlimited means it continues on in the future also. There's a question on the Govinda Dasi. Can you send it over there, the mic?
In reading the other verse, isn't there some concern that if that verse were taken exclusively, people might misunderstand and not feel they have a duty to take care of their parents or take care of their children or whatever, which has sometimes in the past been an issue mm-hmm. in the misunderstanding of devotees, when actually we know that Prabhupada very much wanted us to be supportive of our family members and so forth. And also, some of these things, not necessarily worship of the demigods, are basic pious life, basic mode of goodness life, that you receive a guest properly, that you're respectful to others, that you all these kind of things. And so just to take that verse exclusively, it's a little bit of a, it could be misinterpreted. That would be my concern.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. Did someone have a response to Janmashtami? No. Okay. Madhumohan Prabhu.
Well, this was on the qualities, how many qualities Krishna has. There was another nice verse on that point that I just thought would be nice to read, is that 10.14.7 verse, where it says, in time, learned philosophers or scientists may be able to count all the atoms of the earth, that's a lot of atoms, particles of snow, or perhaps even count the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars and other luminaries. But among all these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of living entities? And of course, in that purport, there's a very sweet point that I could just bring up. Sanatan Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of the material creation, the Lord's manifested infinite qualities. I didn't read that with the right. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of the material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. Thus, every conditioned soul can appreciate the Supreme Lord in a particular way. So that's just makes it very personal, that the qualities are because there's always one quality for each entity. And we know that there's living entities, Sarvagatim, they're everywhere. And what Janmashtami that question that you had, could you state it again? It wasn't clear exactly what you were asking.
This point about how Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, Kilam Rasamrita Murti, and then he likes to share this pleasure with the living entities. And then he says that one simply has to cooperate with the Lord, right? Something like that. So that's how we do it, performing devotional services, cooperating with the Lord. So my question is, Prabhupada is, I've looked for this for years, and I haven't been able to find an exact reference, that describes the reciprocation that Krishna gives because he's pleased with us because of a cooperative mood, or you know, we're doing service. I mean, I've got different statements which that Prabhupada's made, but I was kind of looking for a particular reference like that. Yeah. They're not so direct, you know, to in that point.
There's also one verse in 10th Canto Srimad Bhagavatam, Anugrahaya. I was thinking, I had to think about it. Anugrahaya bhaktanam anushinam dehinamastita. Oh, I don't know, 10th canto. It must be chapter 33. Anugrahaya bhaktanam manushinam dehinamastita. It must be 30-something. Yeah. Krishna is saying that he's come actually to the material world out of his anugrahaya, means his extreme mercy. Particularly for the living entities. You got it? No. Anugrahaya Bhaktanam, let me see if I find it. I don't want to belabor the class, so I'll look it up. I have it probably in Shlokamrita or something. Anugrahaya Bhaktanam, Anushinam Dehinamastita.
Now we can look it up afterwards.
Yeah, we'll look it up afterwards, not to belabor the class. Okay. I'll look it up. But this verse will explain that point.
Tantrashmar Bhavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki.